Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's October the 26th, 2006. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss today's cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, a new survey shows it is very important that biofuels are making the U.S. less dependent on foreign oil. And the Underwriter Laboratories has stopped certifying E85 pumps. Oh, and one other thing. The 79th FFA convention is underway in Indianapolis. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau. And then, just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Thursday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at agrigold.com.
For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. If you haven't been to the FarmDoc website, this is the week to make that visit. University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good writes extensively about the markets there. And there's a brand new basis tool. The corn and soybean basis tool can calculate, monitor, and evaluate the nearby basis, spot cash prices, and nearby futures prices. The new corn and soybean basis tool Excel spreadsheets may be downloaded in the Fast Tools section of the FarmDoc website. On this Thursday afternoon, the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange finished the day like this. Over at the Mercantile Exchange, the numbers finished with the nearby contracts in the live cattle pit at $91.10. They were up $1.70 for the day. December futures at $2.075 higher at $90.65. October feeder cattle at $107 even were up 30 cents. December lean hogs $3 higher today, and they finished at $64.47. From the Chicago Board of Trade, December corn futures at $3.27 were unchanged at the end of the day. March contract at $3.39, up a quarter. May futures up 1 1/4 at $3.46, and July futures at $3.51, up 1 1/2 for the day. December wheat at $5.07, down 9 1/4. The March futures at $5.24 were off 8 1/2 cents. November soybean $6.27 3/4, up 5 3/4. January futures up 6 1/4 at $6.41 3/4, and the March contract at $6.50 even, up 7 cents. November beans at $6.75 1/2 for next year, up 9 1/2 for the day. December bean meal futures at $186.10, and they were up 90 cents for the day. December soybean oil at $27.04 finished 46 higher. You can find much more on the commodity futures and everything else at WILLAG.org.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
A quick look at the outside markets now. Crude oil December contract last traded $61.40, and they're off $1.02 for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up about 12 points for the day, and they're trading at 12,134 at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened to the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about this trade for the day.
Well, soybeans were the leader here today, or they're the ones that kind of stood out right away from the get-go. Wheat opened lower, as well as corn. And I think the rally in soybeans eventually helped out the corn market kind of come back to unchanged, at least in the front months. See some bull spread unwinding. I think we're seeing some selling of the D's and maybe buying of the back end months, selling of the back end months as they maybe wind out of some of their spread. So when they're selling the D's and you're starting to see maybe some bull spread trade type kind of take hold here in the front end months. But corn was kind of a consolidation type day, I think, from yesterday's surge on up into the 330s, and then we're just kind of sitting still. Soybeans, again, was kind of consolidation. We did not take out yesterday's high, but we did trade up into the 30s, which was probably kind of constructive. And wheat probably has the most bearish-looking chart pattern. We had a high here a week and a half or so ago. We had that decline into Monday. We've rallied back, and now the market's failed to take out that high that we had here a week ago. And now we're kind of on the downtick. I suppose if we go down below $5, that would begin to kind of look like a toppy-type chart pattern, Todd.
As you take a look at the tech side of this, any damage being done this week, or is it setting up for a breakout week one way to the other?
Well, wheat looks like it could be a damaging week. We still have one day to go, but like I said, if we go on down underneath the Monday's low point, I think then you would begin to kind of have kind of a top-type formation in wheat. If wheat does that, then you might want to think that corn would follow, since wheat kind of led this whole rally up. Corn kind of got, you know, the second wind here after the crop report. But if wheat would begin to roll down for a period of consolidation or a correction as we go through the end of the month, first part of November, then I think the corn market is vulnerable to such a decline also. Not necessarily saying that this would be the top of the fall market, but it does look like after several weeks of running to the upside, the market might be kind of wanting to take a breather in here.
And if it takes a breather, how long do those usually last? Are they just a week or 2 weeks?
Well, it depends. It could last as short as a week to maybe as long as 3-4 weeks. A lot of that will depend upon the news and whatnot. But, you know, you can see major corrections take place in bull markets that take 3 to 4 weeks, and then they'll resume the upside and the way we go. I kind of suspect that the market might be more in a consolidation phase, looking ahead as we go through the end of the month here. A lot of times you kind of go opposite of what the dominant trend was for the month simply because of profit-taking. The other thing is the market will probably be watching the election here in a week and a half. The market will also be looking forward to the November crop report. That could have some surprises in it, nothing earth-shaking, but it could have some surprises in it one way or the other. Once you get past the November crop report, that we're kind of the end of the crop report run for a while. We do have something in December that's kind of a supply-demand revisions if anything needs to be revised. But for the most part, then we wait around for the big number that comes out in January, which gives us the stocks, December 1st stocks number, as well as a final production number. So I would suspect once you get past middle part of November, if we don't have some more bullish news, then you might begin to kind of think that year-end liquidation from funds and whatnot might begin to take hold during the month of December and kind of be a kind of a choppy down month.
Those farmers from Champaign West have a different view of the market probably than those that are east of here into Indiana and Ohio, who are lagging well behind on their harvest and now looking not at crops that are completely out of the ground, but a whole lot of corn and some serious soybean acreage that they still need to cut at this point. And they've got cold weather and rainfall. Will that have any impact, or is it having an impact?
Think that's always a supportive impact when you have harvest delays due to rain, and then it begins to lengthen out. We're really not late yet, but anytime you get into harvest delays, you begin to run the risk of yield loss and field loss and whatnot. So, the market probably has a concern with that in corn, probably not so much as in beans. But, you begin to worry about that, especially with this year's market worrying about every little bushel that we have.
Have you, and I'm going to switch topics a little bit with you and see whether you've delved into this, checked in on tax ramifications yet of a fairly large crop and pretty good size yields and what folks there at Farm Bureau might be saying about what guys need to do in order to protect income?
Well, that is off a little bit. Most of the farmers, everybody is different, though. I mean, it's kind of hard to put everybody in the same camp.
Yes.
But for the most part, probably farmers need to put more income into this tax year. Just because prices are higher here, they collected fairly hefty LDP payments last year, and that brought a lot of income into their year. So there's reason to believe that there could be some more selling from the farm community for income tax balancing than anything. I mean, like I said, everybody's a little different. Everyone's got different books and whatnot. But if there's anything that I've heard is that there might be a tendency that people need a little more income into the current tax year.
Go ahead and sell that more would be more likely to sell and actually take a payment for that grain at this point rather than delaying it into
January. Right. And, of course, you know, most of these elevators and everything have ways of, you know, balancing the income tax from, you know, holding the check or whatnot. I don't know how legal all that is, but I'm sure it's fairly legal. But but I would say that would be the only thing that I would say is that there's probably a tendency that people maybe need a little more income yet into this tax year.
So if they're in that boat, or you think it's okay to go ahead and make the sales?
Well, you can't turn down. It's kind of hard to turn down these prices, but I mean, you have to kind of go with the trend as your friend at the moment. And is the market, I mean, the Dease corn still kind of has got a 350 type price objective. Whether or not that's attained or not, we'll have to kind of wait and see, but there's one there. Soybeans is, moving along with wheat and corn on ideas that, you know, acreage is going to fall off significantly next year. So basically a function of the bean market here is maybe to attract more acres in South America. This is the time to try to get as many South American acres into soybeans also. So the bean market is trying to hold its own and not lose supply to corn and wheat at the moment.
What happened over at the Mercantile Exchange today?
Well, livestock markets are struggling, but it does look like we're trying to, you know, pull out of some lows that we maybe had here in the marketplace here. Hog market is up sharply here today, upwards of $3, mm-hmm. $2.75. I can't give you necessarily a real strong fundamental reason why we did that, because other than we're probably confirming some seasonal lows in here.
Okay, anything we need to talk about on these two markets?
That's about all I have.
All right, thanks much.
Uh-huh.
We appreciate it. That's Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Daily Farms Incorporated, Arthur; First National Bank and Trust Company, Clinton; GCOM Incorporated, Savoy; and Tepper Electric, Champaign. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
By the way, the average Central Illinois cash price yesterday at $307.50 for corn, and at $6 even for soybeans. At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk about the agricultural weather, that with Pete Levitt. And in the meantime, we do have our own Ed Kieser's weather forecast for tonight. He says across the two-state region in northwestern Illinois, mostly cloudy skies, some scattered showers. Elsewhere, cloudy, some rain. Lows will range from 38 this evening in northwestern Illinois to 48 in the far south. Tomorrow, Ed says, in northern Illinois, mostly cloudy, a chance of a few scattered showers. Elsewhere, cloudy, periods of rain, the heaviest and steadiest in the south. Highs will range from 47 in portions of northern and central Indiana to 54 in the far south. Wind speeds 10 to 20 miles an hour tomorrow. The minimum afternoon relative humidity ranging between 65 and 90%. The extended forecast, scattered light rain, snow showers will occur to the Great Lakes on Saturday, including portions of northern and eastern Indiana. Dry weather elsewhere.
In agricultural news, A new survey conducted by the Biotechnology Industry Organization says two-thirds of respondents say it is very important that biofuels is making the U.S. less dependent on foreign oil. The bio poll says 82% of adults believe the federal and individual state governments need to provide financial incentives to encourage the production and availability of biofuels. Russia says its WTO negotiations with the U.S. are hung up over veterinary controls on imports of frozen U.S. meat. Russia has a ban on all U.S. beef imports, and it is refusing the freezing of pork as a risk mitigation measure to guard against trichinosis. Russia says the disagreement is holding up talks about joining the WTO. The U.S. has requested such talks before Russia can become a WTO member. Renewable Fuel Association officials say Underwriter Laboratories' decision to suspend E85 pump certifications has not prompted widespread shutdown of those pumps. UL suspended certifications of E85 pumps earlier this month after research showed high rates of corrosion, which could make it more difficult to contain the fuel. RFA spokesperson Matt Hartwig.
What UL is doing, from my understanding, is, you know, just taking another closer look at the components of the pump. You know, again, in Iowa, the state has gone out and looked at them. They don't feel there's any risk there.
Thus far, the UL decision has led to the closing of two stations in Columbus, Ohio. Indiana officials say the decision will have little or no impact on the 40 E85 pumps in the Hoosier State. There are more than 1,000 E85 pumps nationwide. USDA's Office of the Inspector General says the agency needs to pay closer attention to state surveillance reports on bovine tuberculosis. The IG says APHIS was not using its oversight tools timely or effectively. APHIS Administrator Rhonda Haven says new procedures will be implemented by the end of the year. The 79th FFA convention is underway in Indianapolis. National FFA President Travis Jett says the organization will be giving back to the host city.
We're very excited about introducing the first ever National Day of Service. 800 FFA members who are attending this convention will be spread out across this city and serving Indianapolis because you've already given so much to us. These members will be working with gleaners. They will be building homes with Habitat for Humanity, and they'll be working in beautification projects across this city. It's our way of saying thank you, but more importantly, it's our job to demonstrate and instill service.
Meanwhile, Indiana Lieutenant Governor Becky Stillman says the FFA convention is a great way to showcase Indiana agriculture.
Well, we are so pleased to have 55,000 FFA members from across the country. We want Indiana to be the global leader in food and agricultural innovation and commercialization. We'll be able to share that news, share some of our progress, but also pick up some other good ideas from other states.
Indianapolis is expected to host the FFA convention for the next 7 years. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. There you'll find the latest USDA reports, along with a way to subscribe to our weekend newsletter or our podcast of the Closing Market Report, the Pre-Opening, and the Opening Market Report. It's all right there at willag.org. Well, in today's listener opinion forum, Champaign County Farm Bureau's Karen Hertz says an informed electorate makes smart decisions.
Candidates advertising on television and radio are a constant reminder that an election is coming up soon. On November 7th, voters across the country will go to the polls to vote for candidates on the federal, state, and local levels. Hopefully, you will be one of them. But how informed are you about what each candidate stands for? The Champaign County Farm Bureau encourages voters to familiarize themselves with candidates in these final weeks before the election. Visit the Champaign County Clerk's website for basic information on individuals running for local offices. Each household should also soon receive a voter's guide via the mail. This publication is a great resource on area races. We especially encourage people to take a look at their local county board district race. The county board makes decisions on a regular basis that affect each and every one of us. This is not a race to simply vote at random. Get to know these candidates and what they stand for. Many of them have websites or email addresses and are very willing to speak with people in their districts. For races on the state level, we encourage voters to take advantage of the Illinois Farm Bureau's Voters Handbook on the Illinois Farm Bureau website. It lists each candidate's voting record on issues important to agriculture, as well as the candidate's responses to questions about the most pressing problems facing Illinois. You can find the Illinois Farm Bureau Voters Handbook by going to www.ilfb.org and then clicking in the upper right-hand corner on the icon for the handbook. However you choose to do so, please take the time to make an informed decision about who and what you are supporting this year and vote accordingly. Remember, your opinion doesn't count unless you vote. From the Champaign County Farm Bureau, I'm Karen Hertz.
Karen Hertz's comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bastifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, now joins us to take a look at the cash grain market for this Thursday afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about cash grain movement. Are farmers actually moving grain into the elevator still today, despite the rainfall?
Pretty much what was done last night. I think the rain stopped them here today, but there were a lot of beans finished up prior to the rain getting here in this area. So I think most guys are down to the, you know, wrapping it up stage anyhow.
So a few semi-loads and a few wagons that were filled last night that they managed to pull over the scales this morning or whenever
right.
they got around to it today. Are they happy with cash prices, and are they actually making extra sales along the way?
Yeah, I guess that's an interesting question, because if you look out here at the basis levels and the spreads, we see the spreads continuing to tighten up. We see the basis continuing to get a little bit better. But if I were to ask, and I've done this, the elevator managers, I'd say that most would answer that your average guy out here has a higher percentage of his crop sold, at least on corn, than what he normally would at the end of harvest. So I think what we've seen is that the farmers sold grain here, but the elevators were well prepared, had space made, had storage built, and, you know, it's not hitting the pipeline necessarily, but it is getting priced from the farmer.
It is out of the farmer's hands, yeah. I made a check on that last night, in fact, and found that the one elevator I contacted thought that about 70% of the grain that had crossed the scale this fall had been sold.
Yep, kind of interesting.
And how does that impact what happens over the next 6 months, do you think?
Well, I think the other side of that, too, is that we have seen things. We've seen the basin narrow up. We've seen spreads narrow, but we haven't. I mean, we're not at really abnormal levels. We're at pretty normal levels. We just got so wide on bases, so weak on bases last year, and so wide on the spreads that, you know, today's look awfully narrow, but they're not when you look at them historically. So I think you see some real volatility. And, in fact, I was using the AgMass FarmDoc basis tool there today and looking at back at 95 and you see some real volatility in the bases as well, and I think we'll see that. We'll see some quick moves up, get grain bought, move back, you know, weaken out. I think you can see more volatility in the bases as we move forward here. But there is grain to move yet.
You know, I wonder, do producers need to be careful on the basis and thinking about maybe that this is being narrow or normal at this point when really that 8 extra cents we've talked about before to cover transportation cost might still be there, and this really could be a fairly narrow basis?
Yeah, I think if the commercial side, I mean, if the users, that's the other thing, the users really were sitting back waiting to get some harvest basis, weak basis levels bought. If they get their needs satisfied, I think they can back off pretty quickly, and that's part of the volatility I'm talking about.
What are your bids for the day?
On the cash corn, 307, cash beans, 606.
We appreciate you being with us. Bill Maris with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons. In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Provena Health is challenging a state ruling that it must pay county property taxes. The ruling came last month from the head of the State Department of Revenue, which overruled a ruling from the state administrative law judge. Illinois now says Provena must pay taxes for its Provena Covenant Hospital facility in Urbana because it doesn't meet tax-exempt status for charity care. Provena says the Revenue Department's ruling is unsupported by law and fact. It's filed for a review by a Sangamon County judge. The Champaign County Board has decided not to fire a co-administrator who's been criticized for his handling of the county nursing home construction. But after 4 hours of closed-door discussions last night, board members did decide to monitor Denny Inman's job performance every 4 months through the end of his contract. State money will help renovate and expand several parks in Champaign County. Illinois' Open Space Land Acquisition Development Program will give more than $342,000 to the Champaign Park District for its new Porter Park on Windsor Road. The County Forest Preserve District will get $228,000 to acquire about 39 acres to connect two other lots at Middle Fork Preserve, northeast of Rantoul. Funds are also headed to the Urbana Park District to improve Victory Park and to Mahomet for Bridal Leash Park. A Salem, Illinois-based broadband provider will be able to expand its service to 12 Illinois counties thanks to a federal grant. Two rural development loans from the Department of Agriculture will help a firm called Fiber 52522 connect fiber optic lines to rural homes. The low-interest loan program authorizes USDA Rural Development to make loans to deploy broadband service to communities with a population of 20,000 or less, with the first priority going to communities without service. The University YMCA on the U of I campus is trying to rally support for a major repair project at its headquarters. Director Steve Shoemaker says the 1930s-era building on Wright Street needs more than $2 million in heating, plumbing, and electrical work. He says an engineer's report found the building itself otherwise sound. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture, on this Thursday afternoon. Pete Levitt joins us now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. It's cold and kind of wet here in the Midwest, Pete.
Yes, it is, Todd, and we're going to have to put up with the cool weather for another couple of days, but the wet weather will probably climax tomorrow as we get the system that's over southwestern Kansas now finally moving eastward along a cold front that lays across southern Illinois at present. And that, as that low-pressure system moves across the region, we'll get heavier rain tomorrow, and then the system will move on eastward. Cooler air will be in there with clearing weather on Saturday and Sunday, and then we start to warm up as we move into next week. So we've got one more day of really raw weather to look forward to here, with temperatures only struggling to get out of the upper 40s and maybe up to the 50-degree mark both today and tomorrow, and then we'll see temperatures warming up into the mid-50s by the weekend, and even the 60s on Monday and Tuesday.
When you say that'll move out eastward after tomorrow, does that include Ohio? There's a lot of concern that the folks in the western or the eastern parts of Indiana and Ohio are still lagging behind or still have quite a bit of harvest to make up, and they've been wet for, well, the last couple of days.
Yeah, that wetness, I'm afraid, is going to continue through Saturday over in the eastern portions of the Corn Belt. They will dry out next week, but as you've said, they really are quite far behind. The farther east you go in the eastern Corn Belt, or south for that matter, the farther behind the harvest is. And we see that particularly in Ohio and Kentucky. And the same problems of wetness are affecting getting the winter wheat crop into the ground. And so Illinois has been managing to stay about at a normal pace. But when you get into Indiana and Ohio and down to Kentucky, those areas are falling quite far behind.
We'd better check in on the South American crops.
Okay, in South America, well, we had plenty of rain in Brazil, and that's probably mostly good news. Somebody's meat is somebody else's poison, I guess, for the new crop activities. The rain is welcome for getting some of the old crops out of the ground. The rain is a bit of a detriment, and in this case, planting of the summer crops is probably going to be stalled just a bit until we get this rain out of the way. But they needed the moisture, and they got that in Brazil. And the Argentina is still on the dry side. They've had a little moisture. They need some more, but they're at least not in quite as bad shape as they looked at this time last year.
Pete, we appreciate you being with us.
And my pleasure.
Peter Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons. Don't forget to tune in again tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the ag markets on the pre-opening commodity market report with Dave Dickey, your director of agricultural programming, and that you can pick up all of those daily casts on our website at WILLAG.org. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.